Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls, or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to full. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome in, everyone, to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. The Red Sox just dropped Game 1 against the Philadelphia Phillies in probably the most embarrassing fashion we've seen so far this summer. They lose 3-2 in extra innings due to catcher's interference with the bases loaded. Pretty much just the most Red Sox way to lose you can imagine. So credit to them for keeping us on our toes, at least. I'm your host, Jason Kelly. I'm here with Mark and Chris. And guys, we knew this series was going to be tough, but I think that's a pretty brutal way to start because you kind of kept up with Zach Wheeler the whole game. You know, Walker Buehler finally pitched really well, and you get to extra innings. You got a chance to take the lead. You didn't do it, and then it all fell apart after that. So, Mark, I'll start with you. How are you feeling after not just the loss, but the way they lost too?
Well, obviously, the way they lost is it's so them it hurts, especially in extra innings on the road. I think they're 0-7. I don't know if this was the 7th one or if it was the 8th one, but 0-7 on the road in extras. And I just I kind of put down a note to myself, and I want to know what you guys have to say about this, but. Is Alex Cora, does he have no creativity in these extra innings? Like, you know what I mean? And I know the easy answer is move the base runner over and so on and so forth. But it just feels like he's just going to stay the course and just hope someone puts the bat on the ball. No hit and run maybe attempts. The simple answer would be, why don't you move Ref Snyder over? Situational hitting, work on that, hit the ball to the other side of the infield. I just feel like he's just waiting for everyone to get hits in this situation. And guess what, guys? They struck out 16 times tonight.
Yeah. Paul, yeah. Chris, your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I mean, every extra innings game seems like they're playing for two. And you were right, Mark. They're 0-7, I think, including tonight's loss on the road, which is just pathetic. But by accident, you should win one of these damn games on the road in extra innings. But when you're playing for two every single time, you can't even get one. It's a foregone conclusion you're going to lose. it was an embarrassing way to lose. But I mean, let's face it, even if that doesn't happen, 99.9% chance we are losing that game regardless of the catcher's interference. When you walk the bases loaded, when there's already someone starting on as the ghost runner on second, like, you're losing that game 9 out of 10 times. It was a good game. I guess the encouraging part is Walker Buehler had a pretty good outing, only gave up 2 runs against a pretty darn good offense. For me, that game was over when they had a chance to make it 3-2 and weren't able to. I knew the game was good. Somehow we would find a way to lose, and it's becoming pretty frustrating at this point. You know, another start to a second half after an all-star break, and here we are with a losing record. I know it's early in this 9-game stretch, but do I think we're going to win the next two? Probably not.
Yeah, I agree. That first and third with one out, where they had the chance to pull ahead, and was it Bregman who was at the plate, grounded into that double play? Yeah, I mean, that's just, you know, that's their luck, right? Like, first and third, one out. Bregman's, you know, that's the guy you want up at the plate, but he hits a tailor-made ground ball to the third baseman who makes the right play, and obviously Bregman's not going to beat that out even on a good day. So, yeah, you knew that was going to come back to bite him. And I get the Cora, you know, I get why he used Chapman where he did. I have no problem with that. I thought that was smart, especially with those two back-to-back left-handers and, you know, Schwarber and Harper. But and you get to extra innings with a ghost runner and Hicks is your first choice after that. Like, the guy is known for walking guys. He's known for giving up base runners. I mean, look, it's hard in these extra inning games when you're on the road. The home team's always going to have that advantage because it's just, you know, a base hit and they win kind of thing. Whereas, you know, obviously being on the road, even if you score, you still got to defend the next inning. But Jordan Hicks, I mean, you just saw it coming. Like, after the first walk, it's like, oh, here we go. Like, he's gonna lose control of this. This is not his territory. Like, I know Breslow called him a high leverage late inning reliever. He really isn't. He was a reliever who's then a failed starter, and now you're trying to make him a reliever again. I wouldn't say that he's a high leverage guy. That would not be someone I would describe as high leverage. But then again, would I have felt better if Weissert was in there? No. Would I have felt better with Alcala in there? No. Bernardino? Probably not. So they are kind of limited in options, and this is where you look at it and you go, if this team is serious, you know, trade deadline's coming up, maybe another reliever that you can trust in these kind of late-inning situations is worth looking at, because Jordan Hicks is not the answer. And you saw that coming a mile away. And Chris is right. Even without the catcher's interference, once they lowered the bases, it was over. I mean, just, you know, a fly ball ends it. So just kind of a real kick in the nuts way to lose after you really competed the entire game. And you're going up against, you know, a Cy Young favorite in Zach Wheeler. Duran gets to him early. You're able to tie the game up later on. That was good to see from them. But to lose like that, it hurts extra.
I just think that, you know, to all both your guys' points, like, when Hicks came in, I was actually moving down, setting up, and so I had the game on the GameCast, and you know, it's all the pitches are just it's not even close, and I'm saying, well, this is it. And to your point, you know, I think we do need another high leverage, medium leverage pitcher in the bullpen. But I want to get your guys' thoughts on this too. You know, Nevarez is a rookie, and I'm not even talking about the catcher's interference thing. I'm just talking about him playing a full season with the black hole that is Connor Wong behind him. You know, they're calling him El Capitano and all this stuff, and that's fine. He's having a nice rookie season, certainly. But I do think backup catcher has to be, you know, on the table at the trade deadline as well. And by the way, screw the trade deadline. Like, let's make some trades now while we're facing these teams. You don't have to go out and get, you know, a superpower now, but you can go out and get a backup catcher who can actually drive a run in possibly for maybe one or two this season, which Connor Wong, who is now the centerpiece, the only player left in the Mookie Betts trade, I believe, who's even in the major leagues, which is embarrassing. But I mean, that's something you can do tonight. You know what I'm saying? To get that guy in there, and you just Wong, love you, mean it. Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, I love that you said that, Mark, because, I mean, I said in the war room last night, I think it was a grave mistake for the Sox, which we all knew they were going to do. They were going to use these 9 games as a benchmark to see where they're at and kind of take their pulse and see how serious they're going to be going into this deadline. But they've done that the last couple of years where we're in the same position. And what have they done? They've let us start to sink the ship and then go, oh, well, the ship's sinking. So let's not put too many things in there to try and make it better. Like, we'll let it sink and we'll come back next year. And this was a year where I thought we had a good opportunity to, like, we could make a staple move. And I knew it wasn't going to happen at the All-Star break, but coming out of it, like in the middle of the Cubs series, coming into this series, something, just do anything to make this team better and let them know that, like, hey, we're behind you and we're serious about competing. You guys need to be serious about competing. Because I'm starting to get a little frustrated with some of these players too, where they're not showing me enough. And I got to be honest, I couldn't blame the front office, to be honest, if they're not invest in this team. But some of the at-bats that we're seeing, I mean, the strikeouts tonight, I mean, the rookies were horrible. And it was funny because I was listening to the broadcast and they were talking about the Phillies, about how the National League, you know, they're a perennial contender, but are some of the National League teams, the younger teams, the Cubs, the Mets, starting to surpass them because they have much younger talent and rookies that have ascended over the last 2 or 3 years. And let's face it, the Phillies are getting a little bit long in the tooth. Well, look at the Sox. They've got 3 pretty good rookies, you know, on the team between Anthony, Mayer, and Nevarez, and they were dreadful tonight, all 3 of them, terrible. I mean, Nevarez obviously had the play that ended the game, and I don't want to put all the blame on him because I don't think it's his fault, but, I mean, some of the swings Roman Anthony was taking, especially later in the game with guys and runners in scoring position where you could win the game or put us up, I mean, it was just absolutely dreadful. So it's very frustrating at this point.
Yeah, that's kind of what you have to deal with when the Red Sox, you know, they've made it clear that they want to compete, but also they care about the development of the young guys. And so you're going to go through growing pains, unfortunately. Like, guys are going to have nights like this where, you know, you mentioned Roman Anthony. He looked bad. I thought Meyer looked bad as well. He looked completely lost up there, had no answers for Zach Wheeler, which, again, is one of the best pitchers in the league. But still, I mean, this is, you know, your number one draft pick, you know, from a couple of years ago. He should be putting in at least a little bit more of a competitive at bat there. So it's tough because, you know, yeah, you want Anthony and Meyer playing every day. We wanted Campbell playing every day until it just became untenable with him. Narvaez obviously isn't going to play every day, but he'll play most days. But you're going to have nights like this where they're just absolute zeros and the veterans have to come through and help out. And, you know, Duran did his part and, you know, they tried, they fought back a little bit, but it just wasn't enough. And so that's where it's tricky because yes, I want the Red Sox to make moves at the deadline. I don't want them doing anything stupid though. You know, let's not, because I see people saying, you know, oh, dream package would be give up prospects for Chris Sale and Sean Murphy. And I'm like, okay, you don't need Chris Sale and Sean Murphy, right? I agree with Mark. You need a backup catcher. You don't need to go as high as Sean Murphy. Like that's going to get too expensive. That's where it gets silly, right? A backup catcher is so easy to go get. You could go get Nick Fortes from the Marlins for like a bag of baseballs. I mean, seriously, they're all over the place. These teams that are out of it, that are just looking to, you know, ship off parts. You can easily get a backup catcher who is more of a representative player and at bat than Connor Wong. So Mark's right. Like you could do that tonight. There's no reason why you have to wait another week to make that kind of move. But I do think reliever is on the table now. I think we saw that with Hicks and his performance and basically Cora running out of options after Chapman and Whitlock that he can really trust. So that's on the table. I think backup catcher's on the table. I still think impact bat at first base is on the table because Abraham Toro has gone completely backwards, you know, since around the All-Star break and really even before that, really since the middle of June. And this is what happens. I call it the Brock Holt effect, right? Brock Holt is a really good fill-in, you know, versatile utility guy. Right. And he plays every now and then. And sometimes he'll hit for the cycle and it's really exciting. You go, wow, like this Brock Holt guy's pretty good. Then you make him your everyday second baseman, which they did 1 year, and he gets exposed. And pitchers figure him out and they know how to approach him. And suddenly he goes from being a 280 hitter off the bench to a 220 hitter every day. That's what Abraham Toro is. Toro is a really nice fill-in player. Can play the corners, has a little bit of pop in his bat, but when you play him every day, he gets exposed. And that's what's happening now. So I also think corner infield bat or something, middle of the order bat, is where my priorities would stand. Because you see in a game like tonight, your pitching staff for the most part did its job up until Hicks, but everyone else did their job. You can only score two runs. And yeah, I know Philly's, you know, Wheeler's nasty and Philly's got a good bullpen, but you got to be able to score more than a couple runs. The offense has been really stale lately. So I would still say middle of the order impact bat would be top of my list as well.
Speaking of offense, I did a little research because I was watching this game and, you know, the Red Sox battled against Wheeler and, you know, we'd mentioned it before, you know, the kids struggled today, especially on that inside sweeper that he was throwing to them. I mean, they had welcome to the majors because, you know, you're facing one of the best pitchers in the league now. Not to say they haven't, you know, faced good pitching, but that was really telling today where they didn't know they would, there's check swings. It's like they were all over the place with that. But you know, I did a little research on basically my kids would call me an unk, right? Because, you know, I look at the way it's going nowadays in baseball, especially with the Red Sox, with the strikeouts. And I was just curious. So the Red Sox tonight had 8 hits. The Phillies had 7. So they out hit the Phillies. The Red Sox had 16 strikeouts. The Phillies had 8. 8 strikeouts is the average for a major league baseball team in a game is 8. So the Phillies basically were there. The Red Sox doubled the average. I know it was a 10-inning game. But they had, I think they had 15 after, nine. And I was just thinking about, you know, the inability to put the ball in play when it matters. I'm not even talking about base hits. I'm talking about getting back to what I was saying before, moving the runners over, right? Situational hitting, right? And I did a little research because I was looking at players' batting averages, and I was looking at team batting averages too. So team batting averages, all right, 280 or above, all right? In 2013, there were 10 teams that had team batting averages of 280 and above. 2025, there are 0. And if you follow it, you know, I'm not going to go back 25 years, but if you follow it from 2000, it just goes down. And I looked at 2013, the last year that happened. There were 24 guys in the major leagues that were hitting over 300. This year, there's 7. 7 guys in the major leagues that are hitting over 300. And that, I mean, I'm an older dude, you know, like I was a kid in the 80s, you know, kind of grew teenager in the 90s. But like those guys were putting the ball in play. The Kansas City Royals won a World Series by putting the ball in play, you know? So it's just, you know, I know the pitch clock is great and the games are being sped up, but there's a systematic problem with the sport and specifically with the Red Sox. It's like, put the ball in play. All they do is take mega cuts and, you know, it's feast or famine.
Yeah, it's a good point, Mark. I think that, you know, this was an extremely odd game when you look at the pitching versus offensive stats, right? Like, when you really think about it, the offense kind of did their job against Wheeler. They got him out in 6 innings, threw 105 pitches. We did nothing between the 7th and 10th inning against the bullpen. Like, the goal tonight was see if you can get to Wheeler. We did early. Try and get him out of the game early. Relatively speaking, we did. And we did nothing with their bullpen, which made no sense. The other striking stat is Wheeler threw 105 pitches over 6 innings. How many walks do you think he had?
I can't remember. One, maybe? Did he walk anyone?
None. He hit a batter.
Oh, okay, that's what it was. Yeah, he hit Duran. Yeah.
which, I mean, think about that. He went six innings, threw 105 pitches. I mean, he had like 50 pitches within almost two innings. We didn't draw one walk. Like, that's just as alarming as what you said, Mark. Like, we're not putting the ball in play. We're also not drawing any walks. We're not putting anyone on the bag, whether we're hitting the ball. And listen, Wheeler didn't have his best stuff tonight. There were plenty of pitches where we were 2-0 counts, 3-1 counts, and we bailed him out. Like, pitches that were out of the zone by a half a foot inside off this sweeper, off of a cutter, that we swung at when we could have had someone on you know, on the bases. And it changes everything, especially when you don't have your best stuff and you're down 1-0. This team, fundamentally, whether it's putting the ball in play, drawing walks, and we talk about Sadon Rafael, right? He was our MVP as a collective unit for our podcast for the first half. That's one of his Achilles heels. He doesn't draw walks. This team situationally does not get on base, whether it's through walk, putting the ball in play when we need them to. And I don't know what the cure is, because it seems like the only way they win games is either these grand walk-off home runs, right, which are different, or just blowing teams out. But when you got to grind it and you're down a run or you need these tie games, extra innings, they're not favorable to the Sox.
No, I hate their offensive approach, frankly. And I do think it is an organizational, like, foundational thing with the Red Sox. They don't want small ball. They don't want singles. They care about exit velocity and launch angle. And that's why every guy in this lineup, from Sadon to now even the young kids, Anthony, Meyer, you know, Duran, they're all going out there swinging out of their cleats, because that's the offensive approach of the Red Sox. It's, we want launch angle and exit velocity. So they're just going up there, just swinging the crap out of the bat. They don't do small ball. You know, Mark mentioned it. Like, you get to extra innings, you get the ghost runner on. Cora doesn't do anything to try and move him over. It's just, nope, go up there and swing away. And let's hope that someone connects with a two-run homer or a double in the gap. Instead of, hey, maybe if we have someone who's really good at bunting, maybe try bunting the guy over. Okay, now it's one out with a runner on third. We got a good chance to drive him in if someone hits it in the air. Like, it's completely different. Cora doesn't want to do it. He just wants to send the guys up there. And you know, I'd say Cora, might be Pete Fotze too. Just, nope, go out there and swing away. Just swing away and hope that you hit one down the line or hit one into the stands. I mean, that approach is fun when you're playing the Rockies and the Nationals and you can put up 10 runs a game because their pitching staffs are horrible. When you're going up against the iron of the league, whether American League or National League, and you've got better pitching staffs, better coaches that know how to counteract your offense, and you're just going out there swinging away, like, this is what happens. You strike out 16 times in one game, and it completely does you in. So they need to do a whole reassess of their offensive approach. I don't know if you guys remember, it was very early in the season, and it was right around when Christian Campbell was having his good streak, and I think it was Jeff Passan came out with an article about how the Red Sox are revolutionizing the way of hitting, and they use Campbell and some of their other young guys as that example. And it was a classic example of the Red Sox, you know, separating their shoulder to pat themselves on the back, because Christian Campbell had like two good weeks in the majors, and they're like, oh, see, it's that drive line stuff. It's our offensive approach. We're revolutionizing how we play baseball. And then Campbell goes completely backwards. They, you know, anytime they play a good team, they can't score more than two or three runs. It's a joke. Like, yeah, when you're playing the Rockies and you win, you know, 15-1, yeah, sure, that's great. You can launch on those guys. You go up against the Phillies, or, you know, you go up against you know, Toronto or any of these better teams with better pitching staffs, it's not going to work. And it's going to bite them, you know, come playoff time. If, you know, hopefully they are playing in October, but you're going to see a lot of low-scoring games if they keep trying to do this. It's just, their offensive approach is just terrible. It really is.
Yeah, and just to, you know, build on that, to go back to what we talked to before, number one, I hate Cora's answer of we're playing for two. Like, no, get the lead. Get the lead. You know, get one. That doesn't make any sense, right? So I don't like that. And to your point, Jason, I was thinking about when you were talking about, you know, revolutionizing the game and so on and so forth, I was thinking about Tristan Casas And if he was sort of here and if he was healthy, you know, I know this is a big what if, but like, you know, I could see his approach being a lot like, you know, he just buying into this swing out of your boots. Cause that's what, you know, that's what he was showing before he even got hurt. Instead of maybe, you know, peppering the wall, right, in left field, having these lefties at Fenway, you know, and this is where you might miss Devers, right? Because he was able to do stuff like this. And it's really frustrating. And again, that play for two, oh my goodness, it drives me up a wall. And they did do well with Wheeler, and what do you have, 105 pitches after six, yep. Right? So, and it's funny too, because I think it was after the first inning or the first two innings, man, he was hitting his spots everywhere, all along those boxes. And even when he wasn't hitting his spots, he was getting swings and misses. You know, and then it was like, then the like tables turned where Walker Buehler was really hitting his spots and Wheeler was struggling. And Buehler had a really efficient game with the help of a bunch of really, to the Red Sox credit, you know, try to be positive here. They turned a couple of nifty double plays, which they've been struggling with this year on their defense. So, I mean, that was good because it saves Walker Buehler and it gets him out there. I couldn't believe they brought him out for the seventh, but it worked.
Yeah, you know, watching the beginning of this game and the way we were playing, and especially with like the amount of double plays we were getting early on, right, when we had that 1-0 lead, it just seemed like every inning we were ending it on a double play. I started to think and reflect. I was like, you know, because I was very frustrated coming out of that Cubs series, and I said, all right, we can't hang with the big guys. And the Phillies are a good team, but they are not the Cubs, okay? They're not in that echelon of teams, not this season. They're probably the next level down. I started to say to myself, all right, can we compete with that next level? And then can pieces get us closer to what the Cubs are? And again, not to beat them, but to at least be competitive. Because I'm sorry, even though we won that third game, that series was not competitive. Not in my book. Our offense looked absolutely dreadful. Speaking of the approach and us revolutionizing the game. But I got to be honest, though. I mean, the way that this game played out, I mean, we couldn't have done any better against Wheeler. And we still lost. We still found a way to fumble this game away. And it just got me thinking, like, you know what? Maybe we're not as close as some of us thought.
I think you might be right. And the offense is the biggest part of it. You know, I know a lot of people are clamoring for a number two starter at the deadline. I think your pitching's been fine. Like, I would be okay if the Red Sox didn't, you know, blow their stack to go get Joe Ryan. Like, you know, because I think that the price for a guy like that is going to skyrocket the closer we get to the deadline. And they may end up having to give up someone that you didn't want to give up, like a Yostinson Garcia or, you know, something like that. No, I think you need another bat in that lineup. You know, someone to play first base, whether it's Ryan O'Hearn or, you know, Josh Naylor, I don't love because he can't hit lefties. I don't think O'Hearn can either. So those options are a little tough because at the end of the day, you want someone who you can put in there against lefties other than Abraham Toro. But yeah, they need to get someone like that. And to your point about Casas, Mark, like, I think you're dead on. If he was still here and he was healthy, he'd be doing the same damn thing that, you know, Sadon's doing, that all these guys are doing. I mean, he literally ripped his ribs apart swinging too hard. Like, that's what Tristan Casas does. Like, he's a big hulking dude, and he takes these, you know, just American Gladiator type swings. And before he got hurt, when he just wasn't hitting, he would, you know, he had a lot of flyouts, and everyone was marveling at the exit velocity. Oh, yeah, but he hit that one 104 off the bat, and oh, this one was 102. Like, it's coming. Like, the turnaround's coming. It's like, not necessarily. He's still flying out. It's still an out. I don't care how hard he hit it. Like, that doesn't matter. I care about, does he get on base? Or can he, you know, drive in a run? Yay, he hit the ball, you know, he hit it 105 off the bat. Yeah, it's the third out of the inning, and we've left runners on base, so who cares? So Casas would, exactly, he would be totally part of it, and he'd be right in the middle of it, too, because they think he's a middle-of-the-order bat. I don't think he is. So, you know, if Casas was here, it wouldn't be any different. And, you know, Rafael Devers, that's what he does. He swings out of his ass. The difference is he's a pure power hitter and he's going to hit 40 home runs every single year. He can get away with that. He's also going to strike out a ton, but everyone in this lineup strikes out. Nobody takes walks. Everybody strikes out. And they're all just looking to launch every single time they go up there. It's just so frustrating. And you see it in a game like tonight where, like Chris said, that you could have won that game tonight. You absolutely could have won that game. You did what you had to do against Wheeler. You got him out of there early. You had a chance in extra innings to take the lead. But, you know, and Mark, I'm with you. The play for two thing is so stupid. No, take the lead and then hope that your bullpen holds it down next inning. Like, don't, because, and that's, that speaks more to their approach. Cora doesn't want to bunt and waste an out getting the runner over. He wants someone to go up there and hit a two-run homer. And then it's like, oh, see, we played for two, so we got a little bit of a buffer. That also suggests he doesn't trust his bullpen beyond Chapman and Whitlock at all, because if he feels like he needs two runs to get through extra innings with the ghost runner, that tells you he does not trust anyone in that bullpen outside of Chapman. So it's, the whole approach is wrong. And look, they're still going to win games here down the stretch, right? They're going to survive. They're probably going to stay in that wild card race, but you're just going to see it as they get up, you know, closer to October and they're playing October baseball against true playoff teams. Their approach is going to do them in. They're going to strike out too much. They're not going to get the situational hitting that they need with runners in scoring position, and it's going to do them in. They're going to lose a lot of 3-1, 4-2 games because of that. And I don't think it's something they can change mid-season now. It's something that they're going to have to look at going forward, you know, for the foreseeable future, because I don't want Roman Anthony to be screwed up by feeling like he has to launch a 500-foot home run every time he goes to the plate. I just think that's disaster waiting to happen.
And that's a great point that you just made, because when he first broke in, I think it was Lou Merlone was talking about how, like, Roman Anthony, you know, sometimes he hits singles. Oh, no. Right.
God forbid
he got a single and got on base and got a base, like a regular base hit, like through, you know, between the shortstop and the third baseman or whatever, you know, wherever. Yes, that's what I want to see. You know, it's funny too, Jason. Willier Abreu ripped a foul ball today down the right field line, and God bless OB. You know, he was like, he was right there with the exit velo, and I'm like, it was a foul ball, OB. It was a foul ball, but there he was, right? By the way, he also got the count wrong one time. He said it was 3-1. It was 2-2. I said, oh, here we go with OB. But one of the things that killed me today too was I'm sure you guys saw it. They showed Dombrowski, right, in the booth, and you know they were just going, you know, Phillies. You know, look, they haven't won the World Series, but you know, three playoff appearances. I mean, their roster is very fun to watch. The Phillies are my son's second favorite team. And, you know, they were talking about the guys that Dombrowski traded. None of them have become all the prospects that he had that were supposed to be these insane prospects really didn't do any. Michael Kopech, you know, maybe won a World Series, I guess. Right. But like the rest of them, not so much. And, you know, my thing is that you've got Brian Bayo up here who's looking pretty good as a pitcher, and that would be weird for the Red Sox to actually develop a pitcher from the minors. You have Meyer and Anthony up here. You know, Campbell needs a little bit more work, but hopefully, you know, he'll be back here. So you've got young guys, and you know, I don't know how you guys feel about this, but you know, the password, Blaze Jordan, Tolley. All right. I know he's ripping it up in the minor leagues. That's great. If those guys can get you good major league players back, pull the trigger on this season and do it sooner than later. Because now if we play, you know, this stretch here, if we get swept by the Phillies and we four, is it four games against the Dodgers or is it three?
I believe it is four.
I think it's
just
four
had
two.
It up to. Oh no, it's just three.
No, I think it's three. It's a 9-game stretch between these three teams.
Yeah. All right, so it's three. So let's say they get swept by the Phillies and they pull one out against the Dodgers, and now it's the trade deadline, and now, you know, it's a poor showing once again out of the out of the All-Star break. And is Cora going to be moping around if they don't make the right moves or whatever? Because it's the same movie, guys, right? It's like watching Star Wars: A New Hope and then watching The Force Awakens. It's the same movie. It's like I can't take it anymore. I need to see some major changes.
Yeah, some great points, and I agree with you. I would like to see a trade sooner than later, but you know what? I'm starting to get to the point where I put a little bit of the blame though on the players and Cora. Like, I don't want to see him moping around. You know what? You want them to make a trade? Do something to like make them want to make a trade, Alex. Don't go 2-7 in a 9-game stretch out of the All-Star break 3 years in a row, and then sit there and go, well, you didn't get me anyone. What did you do to deserve it? Nothing. Same thing. Players, you want help? Give them a reason to give you help. Go win some games you're not supposed to win. Today was one of those. You easily could have won it. Didn't even need to get to extra innings. Roman Anthony, just get a damn hit. Guys on third, get a hit. Don't strike at a ball that's at your feet. It's or swing. Now I'm getting frustrated. I can't even say my words. But to your point, though, of making a trade, you know, I'm going to speak out of both sides of my mouth here because I agree with you. Blaze Jordan, put him in any trade if it's going to get me real talent. I don't care who you trade because to me, our hope, and even the guys that are on the team now, I hope Campbell, Anthony, Mayer, I hope they become big leaguers, all-stars. If you could fetch me one and I give it up, I'll take my chances. Because I haven't seen one on the Sox long-term for a long time. But flip side of that, I also don't trust the Sox. Are they going to keep these guys long-term? Are we going to bring in talent and then keep them? Blaze Jordan, I see people just frivolously throwing his name around like, oh, yeah, put him in this, put him in that. Cool. What about Bregman? Do you have confidence we're actually going to sign Bregman? If not, we might need Blaze Jordan. We also don't have a first baseman. Toro and Gonzalez, as good as they have been, and you know, you made a point before, Jason, that like nothing would have changed if Casas was here. I would actually argue we'd probably be 8 games under 500 if it was Casas versus those two. Because even though I'm saying they're not the long-term answer, they've given you about as much as they possibly can in the state that they have given us to this point. With that being said, we can't get rid of Blaze Jordan if we don't have a first baseman, because he could be either first or third at this point. So unless the Sox, you know, put on their big boy pants here, right? And they decide they want to be a big league club, make trades, spend money, and throw away the farm and keep some of it. I don't know what the right move to do is.
No, it's fair. And you're fair to call out Cora and the players because, yeah, that's what tonight was. It was one of those frustrating, you could have had it. You could have started this 9-game stretch with some momentum, and you blew it. You know, you had chances to win the game. You had chances to go ahead. And like you said, that Roman Anthony at bat, that was a horrible pitch to swing at. And again, it's the approach, just, you know, kind of worming its way back in. It's really irritating to watch when, you know, the game, you know, is in reach and you can win it, and just, they don't do enough. And now it's like deadline's going to come up faster than you think. And, you know, I don't know. At this point, I'm not sure what I want them to do. Do I really want them going all in for this team this year? I don't know, but I also don't want them to do nothing. So I think there are moves they can make. Backup catcher is an easy one. You know, another 7th, 8th inning reliever guy. That's an easy one. You can do that. You know, is Joe Ryan on the table? I don't know. I don't think so. You know, Duran, we don't know what's going to happen with him. So again, this 9-game stretch is not just important because of you're facing good teams. You need to see how you stack up against them. It's important because, yeah, like if you go 2-7 on this stretch, if I'm Craig Breslow, I'm sitting there going, well, you just showed me who you really are. I'm not going to give up, you know, Blaze Jordan or Yoel Stinson for a pitcher or a first baseman, because it's not going to matter. You guys showed me what you are, and it's not good enough. So they got to be real careful. They got to, you know, they got to play a little bit harder. They got to play smarter and just try to salvage some of these games. It's going to be tough. It's a brutal part of the schedule, but That doesn't matter. You're going to have hard games on the schedule. You can't just lose them and go, okay, well, you know, once we play the Rockies again, we'll be all set. Like, no, doesn't work that way. So we'll see what happens. Obviously, as I said, things are not going to get any easier. So tomorrow night, is it a night game? It is, yeah. Another 6:45 start tomorrow. Richard Fitz going for the Red Sox. He's going up against Christopher Sanchez, who is 8-2 with a 2.5 ERA. So another nasty Philly pitcher. It's a lefty too, so get ready for an Alex Cora special where the lineup's going to look all funky. Mark, how are you feeling about the game tomorrow?
Not good. You know, that's why this one I think was so important and it was so frustrating. But yeah, you got the lefty coming in, and like you said, there's going to be, you know, there's going to be all sorts of, you know, this ref Snyder is going to be in there, and is Jaron Duran going to be in there? Mayer is probably not going to be in there at all. And, you know, there's going to be a ton of strikeouts. I'm going to go on to DraftKings and make sure that happens, because it was so frustrating tonight. And, you know, a lot of these guys struggle with lefties. So
Chris, what do you think?
What I do know, Suarez just hit another home run tonight. I digress, but what do I think? I think Fitz is going to put us in a position where we could win, because he's pitched in some pretty brutal environments, including Yankee Stadium, has held the zone. I don't think he'll be the reason we lose. However, I feel like the lineup is going to do us in. If we couldn't win with tonight's lineup, it's only going to get worse tomorrow with a lefty. And, you know, the one thing we didn't talk about is Mayer. I mean, he was responsible for like 3 double plays. His defense has been absolutely phenomenal. His bat has been cold, but his defense has been scorching hot. And if he's not in there tomorrow, that's not going to help Fitz. So I don't feel great about it.
Yeah, I'm not too confident either. I think Fitz will be okay. I don't think he's going to, you know, get his lips ripped off or anything. Although, speaking of DraftKings, I bet you Schwarber's taking him deep tomorrow. I don't know why. I just have a feeling that we're going to see a Schwarbomb before this series is over. And it's probably coming tomorrow. But yeah, I point to the offense. Christopher Sanchez is a really good lefty, and he keeps the ball low, and he either strikes you out or gets ground balls. Against this kind of team where they're trying to launch everything, they're going to play right into his hands. They're going to play right into his hand. A lot of double plays and a lot of strikeouts coming tomorrow. So I don't feel great about it. If Fitz pitches a masterpiece and maybe they can eke out like a 2-1 win or something, you know, maybe they finally get to Philly's bullpen or something, maybe. But the way things are going, the way it looked tonight, yeah, I'm with you guys. I'm not feeling super confident. So we'll see what happens. Again, that game is 6:45 tomorrow. I think it's also a TBS game. I don't know if it's exclusive, but it's TBS as well if you don't feel like listening to OB for a night. So yeah, 6:45 tomorrow. We'll be back after the game to break it all down. So everyone, enjoy the rest of your Monday night. We'll see you tomorrow. Take care.
Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Big news! Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here. It's Black Friday in July. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home at Wayfair. Get our lowest prices of the summer for 5 days only. Plus, amazing doorbuster deals and 24-hour surprise flash deals with fast and free shipping site-wide. So don't wait.
Head to Wayfair.com today to score up to 80% off now through July 28th.
Wayfair, every style, every home.